Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
What opportunities are left out there for the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers? Is it all over? Can they all sing kumbaya now that the star quarterback is reported to training camp? We've got that. We've got Texas and Oklahoma potentially on the move in college football. And we've got big news out of the Olympics. It's Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Courtney Cronin, our ESPN Vikings reporter, filling in for Janae Agumake today. And Courtney, before we get into all of what football has provided us, because we're getting ready to roll into training camps, both in the NFL and in college here pretty soon, there's a lot there. We know this morning for a lot of people waking up, we were expecting to see more of the success of Simone Biles, one of the biggest stars in all of sports, one of the faces, if not the face of the sport, of women's gymnastics for some time now. We were expecting to see another gold medal for her and the U.S. women's gymnastics team, and instead, we saw something that not a lot of people were prepared for. Simone Biles taking herself out of competition, citing mental health as the cause for this, and the U.S. women's gymnastics team went on to take silver in that event. Here was Simone Biles, U.S. Olympic legend, talking about why she exited competition earlier today.
If you could sort of tell us, was there any injury? That was one thing we wanted to know. And if you can elaborate on maybe the stress you've been feeling. We all know when you're in the spotlight, we can imagine what it's like.
No injury, thankfully. And that's why I took a step back, because I didn't want to do something silly out there and get injured. So I thought it was best if these girls took over and did the rest of the job, which they absolutely did. They're Olympic silver medalists now, and they should be really proud of themselves for how well they did last minute having to go in. And it's been really stressful, this Olympic Games, I think, just as a whole, not having an audience. There are a lot of different variables going into it. It's been a long week. It's been a long Olympic process. It's been a long year. So just a lot of different variables, and I think we're just a little bit too stressed out. But we should be out here having fun, and sometimes that's not the case.
So, Courtney, there's been a lot of response to Simone Biles' decision here in this. And mental health's been a conversation around sports and around life in general that's been had more and more publicly. But I think this is still something that we're learning to do. And so I know we get distracted by people who make comments in bad faith on Twitter, who say things because they want to be antagonistic, because they want to take down people that are in positions like Simone Biles. But I also know that there's well-meaning people who come from a different time in sports, who come from an era where this was certainly something you would never see in this sport specifically. And I've had people ask in this instance, and I'm curious what you think when you hear something like this. Why is it not okay to say Simone Biles, the pressure got to Simone Biles in this moment. She froze up, and unfortunately it let the team down in this spot. And people seem to be wondering why it's not okay to say that in this spot, because they see so much of this in sports, so much of the way we talk about it, where we're critical of athletes in other avenues or in other settings who have faltered in similar ways here. So, Courtney, I know that's a lot there, but when you hear something like that, people wondering why they can't be critical in this instance here, what comes to mind for you?
I just, there's a lot of discourse going on right now about, don't put the goat on your leotard if you don't want this to handle this sort of criticism. I guess her being the best gymnast in the world somehow invites her to be criticized for taking a step back when she realizes she's not mentally prepared in that arena. I don't think that's fair. I think, there's people that are going to say, okay, you have to be perfect in the height peak of competition. You know what? Reality sets in. It's not always going to be there. I think when you take a look at this in the grand scheme of things, and you go back to the Olympic trials back in June, when she struggled on the uneven bars, which was like rare for her, considering how good she's been in that event. And you wonder, okay, at the time we thought, oh, it's a fluke, it's a blip on the radar, like Simone's the GOAT, whatever, she'll be fine in Tokyo. And then you see her fly off the floor during trials on her floor routine, and then the issue obviously with vault today. I feel like this is kind of all coming to the surface, that this is something that's been, she's been struggling with for quite some time. And then she's brave enough today to step out there and be like, yeah, this, I was struggling mentally. And there are going to be people who want, like, the absolute explanation of, like, what she was dealing with and all of that. she didn't exactly, I mean, she just said that it's not an injury, it's not a physical injury, but it was something that she was dealing with internally. Can't we just leave it at that instead of being like, why do we need such a big explanation on what happened with her when she's clearly not in the right headspace to be competing in a sport that requires split-second decision-making and preciseness to not get injured?
Yeah, Courtney, I think what a lot of this, and as I've listened to more and more of this, because again, I've heard this from people that I believe truly are not coming at this from a malicious place here, but I think what we've become conditioned as a public watching sport is we have had a lot of opinions about athletes and the way they operate in critical moments. I mean, hell, we talk about the clutch gene all the time in sports as if that's at all a real thing in here. And so when this conversation comes up in this spot, I think a lot of people look at it and see it as, why is Simone Biles being exempt from a discussion about how she performed in this clutch situation? And it, and again, maybe this is just me, but I look at all of this and I go, well, if that's the case, if maybe there is some truth to that, is that a reason for us to then say, all right, we need to be able to criticize Simone Biles for this instance? Or is it a moment where we can examine, all right, are we being critical of the right things when we look at, watch, and talk about sports, right? Like, are there legitimate things, mistakes made in competition, errors in the way that people approach or strategize or perform out on the field that we can be critical of? And are things like this, akin to what Simone Biles and others have dealt under this kind of pressure, are these things that we should still be criticizing in the way that we always have been?
I think certain sports get different treatment, right? Because if Tom Brady crumbled under pressure and, you know, threw a pick at the goal line in the Super Bowl and cost his team, you know, a Lombardi trophy, we'd be criticizing that and saying that he wasn't clutch at the right moment and that it just didn't pan out the way that we thought it should. Somebody who is considered the GOAT performing at peak performance level in the height of competition. I feel like we just think it's an automatic thing, regardless of sport, that these athletes are always going to come through and not have to deal with any of the outside obstacles that may be, you know, crushing down on them at any other moment, that it's okay. You just need to put it away for this one specific moment. It's not a fairy tale. It doesn't always happen the way that you pan it out, you know, in your mind. And, you know, if anybody's out there questioning her toughness, I want to remind you, this is a gymnast who won a world championship days after being admitted to the hospital with a kidney stone in 2018. Like, toughness, physical, mental, what have you, it's all there. So, like, she's done this in other moments before. I think you need to look at the overall context of what she's been through the last 4 years in preparing for this moment, the weight of the entire sport, the weight of the entire Olympics. I mean, I know that we only see it because we see the NBC coverage, you know, in nationally, she's being branded as the face of Team USA, but like internationally, worldwide, she is the face of these games. And I think that that's a lot to put on one person's shoulders. I'm not speaking for Simone and saying that that got to her, but like there's a lot out there in her words that she's talked about these games and really being looking forward to them being over. So she can kind of, you know, get back to whatever she wants to do after this, because the pressure of this has just been, you know, insurmountable. And I don't know how anybody, even the GOAT, could be able to handle all of those weights and expectations on her.
Yeah, Courtney, it's difficult because I also think that, again, there's something about the dynamic of a sport that we don't know nearly as well, because I see a lot of the comparisons of people saying, if Tom Brady decided in the waning moments of the Super Bowl that he was going to pull himself out, or LeBron James, or the way we've been critical of Ben Simmons, would we be reacting in a similar way? But I don't always think they're apples-to-apples comparisons in these things. And again, maybe I'm wrong, and I'm not applying these things the same. Maybe I have to look at the way that I judge and talk about these other athletes in this spot. But I look at this situation, and I see what's gone on here. I see everything you mentioned about what she's come in, the burden she's had to shoulder in this sport based on all of the awful things that have happened to people inside the USA Gymnastics program, that she has said, I am out here making sure I can represent them, the people who don't have a voice in this spot. If all of that wears on you differently than a lot of other athletes have ever had to deal with, and if maybe it should make us appreciate more the athletes who are somehow able to withstand withstand these insurmountable forces. Like, Courtney, I was a player, and I remember seeing awful stuff written about me on message boards, about the Notre Dame message boards when I was in college, and the way that affected me. And I don't say that to compare myself to Simone Biles in a real way. I say it as that's a grain of sand compared to what that woman is walking around with right now. And so maybe we should be more empathetic overall in here. I'm not sure what the answer is here, but the comparisons don't feel perfect enough for me to say just because we've been critical in these moments here that we should necessarily use this as a spot to pounce on her in the same way.
And real quick, I just think that since it's an individual sport, right? Of course, it's a team. There's Team USA. There's all of them out there. But it is a highly individualized sport where you're doing your routine, your teammate's doing hers, et cetera, that we look at it differently versus a LeBron James on a basketball team, a Tom Brady on a football team that is largely reliant upon other people. I know that Tom Brady's great and everything, but he can't go and beat a defense of 11 players all by himself if he doesn't have 10 other players, you know, on the field with him. You know what I mean? Like, it's not apples to apples in that sense. So I think it's being judged differently because tennis, when you talk about Naomi Osaka and that can of worms right there, that's an individual sport. Gymnastics very much the same way, and we don't look at them, I think, similarly in the way that we judge mental toughness, physical toughness, all of those things versus a team game like a football or a basketball.
Yeah, I think we're all struggling to try and find commonality in a sport and in events that, again, we don't understand with the same depth. We don't, a lot of us have the same familiarity, and so I think a lot of that comes from trying to latch on to things that we're familiar with. Lots more we can get into here, certainly. But coming up next, let's head back to NFL training camp. Aaron Rodgers reported for the Packers. Some conversations, though, that are going to start to be had inside training camp all across the league that are finding their way out already. We'll get to that next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll check in with a very frustrated Ron Rivera. NFL training camps are getting going, and a conversation that's been dominating the sports world for the last year and a half is still a major part of what a lot of teams and coaching staffs are getting ready to deal with here. Mike Golic Jr. and Courtney Cronin, our ESPN Vikings reporter, is filling in for Chinne Agwumike today, sitting here with you guys. But Courtney, the Green Bay Packers got their quarterback back, and I am curious, as we talked to you earlier today on our show Zoom, you're over at the Vikings facility getting ready for things to get going here today. Was there any sort of aw shucks moment going on in the Vikings facility now that 12 is back in Green Bay?
Yeah, I think that there's got to be for everybody within the division looking at the Green Bay situation, thinking that, man, they almost got away with a miracle if he didn't show up, and that would have potentially led to maybe he's not going to play this year. Who knows? But I think Mike Zimmer was a little tongue-in-cheek about it when he was asked about, like, just how closely did you pay attention to what was going on to the east of you here in Minnesota this summer? And I think everybody was waiting to see what was going to happen. I don't honestly think until late last night we truly knew if he was going to show up in Green Bay. And seeing everything this morning, I honestly feel for my Green Bay journalist brethren that had to cover every moment of this over the last couple months, but specifically today. Look, we've all done it before, having to try to find tail numbers that get blocked on airplanes, of private jets, trying to figure out if quarterbacks are arriving to camp, and if they're not, in doing the whole stakeout situation. That's not the fun part of the job, but it's over for now, I guess. I mean, he's there. He's in the building. Like, so I don't know what happens next as far as what the next big thing to come out of this is. Maybe it is that they end up trading for Randall Cobb and apparently giving Aaron Rodgers what he wants, his first request. I don't know if that's truly, the biggest thing that they need to do right now. But it'll be really curious to see how this plays out, what the dynamic looks like with the quarterback group in training camp, how everything unfolds during practices, and the dynamic when fans are around. I don't know how often fans are going to be in attendance at Green Bay camp. I'm sure there are a lot of happy fans who are glad that he's back, but I'm also sure for certain, because I've seen it, some fans that are not happy with the way that this saga played out, going from it's all the Packers' fault to Aaron Rodgers is really smug and we're not happy with this because what did you accomplish by all of the last couple months of drama and then you show up anyways?
Yeah, Courtney, it was interesting. We were talking about this with Myra Metcalf, who obviously does a great job as a basketball, college basketball reporter for us, but was born and raised in Milwaukee and is a fan of that Bucks team, and said around there, and I know it's not, you know, the Venn diagram isn't a perfect circle of Milwaukee Bucks fans and Green Bay fans. They're not the Milwaukee Packers, as I heard Bomani Jones say on his podcast the other day. But this state, if it was looking for another superstar, one in Giannis who chose to stay in Milwaukee, who wanted to be here with this team that we talk about all the time in a small market here, they've been given kind of a life preserver to puff their chests out a little bit more in this situation with Aaron Rodgers, because I think winning still forgives a lot in this situation. Like, if he goes out and looks like the reigning MVP again this season, there's not going to be a lot of cries heard from the fan base. But, Courtney, at the very least, Giannis and the success of that Bucks team and a superstar that chose this fan base and this area, really, I think can kind of embolden a lot of those feelings from Packers fans.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think winning is the ultimate requirement this year before that fan base turns against Aaron Rodgers, because if they don't win, then they have been put through this for nothing. And I use they as the fans and the organization, that all of this could have been prevented. And, I mean, it may not matter anyways. Even if they don't win, Aaron Rodgers is probably out of there and they're turning to Jordan Love. But might he be the most hated person in the NFL at that point? And Tom Brady, honestly, becomes like the most loved when you're talking about quarterbacks in the GOAT status? Sure. I think we could very easily see that happen, that it, you know, Packers fans will have put up with what happened this offseason and, you know, every 5 minutes refreshing Twitter to see if there's something new with their quarterback, only if it was all worth it. And all worth it would mean if they get back to the NFC Championship and potentially take one step forward in what's now going to be dubbed the last dance. I know that that's not the first and the last time you've heard that, and you'll probably hear it about 1,000 more times by the end of the week. It's going to be a really interesting dynamic to see just how this whole thing is played out by the team, by the front office, by the coaching staff, by the players, how everybody talks about it publicly, but also then what happens behind the scenes too. Like, can the fabric of this team not get frayed based on what happened throughout the offseason?
Yeah, because you're right. If you're writing storylines here and you wanted to say, because this looks like a win for the front office, and so if you wanted to script this for what a win for Aaron Rodgers looks like, it would be this Packers team not performing up to the Super Bowl level and winning the Lombardi Trophy this year, and then Aaron Rodgers getting moved to the destination of his choice and pulling the Tom Brady and winning a championship that next year. The problem is Aaron Rodgers also wants to be happy himself, and so I'm sure for him the motivation and the goal is to go and win a Super Bowl, which would be another win for the Packers. It would be the perfect timeline for that team, and so this is the difficulty players in this situation are always put in, where the goals always align, the fan base is almost always going to side with management in these arguments, and at the end of the day, you're hamstrung by a limited timeline to play this game, and Aaron Rodgers is one of those quarterbacks that is getting up and starting to feel that. We are brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, though, a very frustrated Ron Rivera is what is probably just the tip of the iceberg in a frustrating conversation around the effects of the pandemic and this upcoming NFL season. We'll get to that next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Coming up tomorrow morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy, as our countdown to the NFL season continues. Bears head coach Matt Nagy, tomorrow morning at 8:45 Eastern with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News. Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
NFL training camps are already presenting us with some very interesting situations. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and ESPN Vikings reporter Courtney Cronin hanging out today. And Courtney, how about this? I saw Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel tweet this. It'll be a busy day in the Packers media auditorium on the first day of training camp practice Wednesday. Scheduled to speak are GM Brian Gutekunst, Coach Matt LaFleur in the morning, and in the afternoon post-practice, Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. Like, they're just going to rip the Band-Aid off right away, apparently, Courtney.
Yeah, and I think Adrian Amos is supposed to speak in that afternoon session. He's going to get completely overshadowed. He's going to be the guy who shows up to the podium. He's like, anybody want to ask me anything? All right, I'm out. Okay. Like, I feel for him. If he really has something he wants to say, I don't know why they decided to lump him into the mix there, too. But, yeah, they're really trying to get out in front of this. I guess you got to give him credit for, you know, it's not like any other team that has a big distraction, i.e. the Houston Texans, is trotting their quarterback out to talk to the media about what's going on.
No, certainly an entirely different situation there, but the Packers are going to try and make this best they can to have this one go away as soon as possible so they can get back to football, which I'm sure is going to work out really well for them, knowing all of us. So
It'll be the only time Aaron Rodgers is ever asked about it, just so you know. This is the only time that anybody's allowed to ask him about it the entire season.
Yes, so get all your questions out now. I hope everyone shows up to this scrum fully prepared because we are putting this thing in a box and we are shipping it out to sea immediately after this. So that conversation will be done after Wednesday, and that'll be exciting for everyone involved. Courtney, the conversation that is likely not going to end during this season is going to be the role of COVID-19, the vaccines, and NFL players in these locker rooms here. And I thought we got a very candid and, quite frankly, frustrated Ron Rivera talking earlier today. The Washington football team's head coach spoke up about the low vaccination rate of players on this team and didn't hold back. Take a listen.
I am. I'm truly frustrated. I'm beyond frustrated, you know. And part of it is, and the reason I walked in with the mask on is, you know, I'm immune deficient. Okay, so with this new variant, who knows? So when I'm in a group and the group's not vaccinated or there's mixture, I put the mask on. And I do that, you know, for health reasons, because nobody really knows. And so I have to do that. And I just wish and I hope that our guys can understand that.
So, Courtney, this is where we currently sit with the NFL. According to the NFL Network report with Dr. Alan Sills, the NFL's medical director, every team has had 60% of their players receiving at least one vaccination shot or both. Five teams had less than 70% of their players receiving one shot or both, and nine have had 90% or more of their players receiving one shot or both. Ron Rivera mentions being immune deficient because, remember, last year he was diagnosed with a form of skin cancer in late August and underwent treatments during the season, which leaves him immunodeficient now. And that frustration of where his team is at, we went through this with Montez Sweat, one of their defensive linemen, who talked very publicly about his hesitancy with the disease. And Courtney, he also cited in larger conversations where this comes back to as well. In addition to Ron Rivera being the poster for the health side of this, the number one most important side of the vaccination conversation, and him saying, if you are a player walking out here unvaccinated, I am one of the people that are at risk that we've talked about, the vulnerable portions of the population. He also then cited the football difficulties that will come with this that a lot of teams were well-versed in, and this Washington team managed to avoid last year that I think gave Ron Rivera hope that's now severely diminished by this.
Yeah, I mean, what if a player has to miss time? What if he infects an entire position group if somebody who's unvaccinated gets, a variant, or even somebody who is vaccinated? I mean, that's the thing. I think a lot of players, at least what I've heard, is, some of the rationale for not getting the vaccine is, well, if you're still susceptible to COVID, whether you get the vaccine or not. I know, you know, people who've gotten sick when they've gotten either the Delta variant, who have been vaccinated for months. And that's something the NFL is going to have to deal with head on. Like, regardless, COVID is not going away. I mean, the CDC put out the recommendation today about people who were vaccinated wearing masks indoors. And that's something that's a tough pill to swallow because it kind of felt like we were almost on the cusp of being over this. And now we're not. And like, maybe we're taking a step backwards. But from Ron Rivera's perspective, as somebody who went through chemo treatments in the middle of a season rifed by COVID last year and still managed to make it through, you know, be in meetings, not have to take time away from the game, it almost kind of feels like, at least I'm not speaking for him, but I'm just kind of seeing his perspective, that it's like a slap in the face if your players who you're supposed to be around every single day and in meetings and, you know, coming up with a game plan to help your guys win can't even get vaccinated to keep you safe when knowing fully well just everything that you went through physically. I can understand it from his perspective. Everybody's going to have a personal perspective on this and a personal opinion about it. Mike Zimmer, the head coach that I cover, the Minnesota Vikings, talked about the Delta variant today when asked about being vaccinated, because he's somebody who was very blunt about this back in June at minicamp, that it's going to be really tough this season for players who are not vaccinated because of all the things that they're going to have to do differently than those who are vaccinated. And it really could tear the locker room apart. We don't know how that's going to play out, but it certainly is going to make life a lot more difficult for those players. But he was very realistic about the fact that the Delta variant's getting a lot of people sick right now, and that the smart thing to do, you know, under those circumstances, would be getting vaccinated so you don't have an outbreak within your locker room that could, you know, pull you away from what your ultimate goal is.
Yeah, and Courtney, I think a lot of that frustration, too, in addition to Ron Rivera feeling like he's a walking example of what this is about, who people are trying to protect and making sure they're vaccinated. He's also brought in a number of specialists. He brought in a Harvard immunologist to talk to his team. He's tried to give them the resources, and this sounds almost like a frustrated parent saying, I understand and want my players, these grown adults, to make this decision for themselves, and I try and arm them with as much information as possible, and it does not appear to be getting through. But you talk about the stakes of all this, too. I mean, we saw that happen in Minnesota with Rick Dennison, the now former offensive line coach there. And Courtney, I know he's moved into a different role with the team, but that seemed like another example of this is going to affect a lot of the way people do their jobs this season in a way that is now less controlled, because there are two camps of protocols in here that are going to be, I had to imagine, a very cumbersome thing to try and mesh.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I think it's all going to come to a head at some point, because we're just starting training camp, and like the NFL Network had reported, you know, 60%, all teams have at least 60% of players with one shot or who are fully vaccinated. Like, wondering what that threshold is going to be. Which are the teams that are going to get to 85% the quickest? Which teams are going to struggle with this? I mean, Rivera was really disappointed given the fact of, like, you know, this is not the first time these players have heard about the vaccine, right? Like, players have been back in the building since OTAs, and they brought in experts on this subject. So I kind of get a little annoyed, to be quite honest, when you have players like Leonard Fournette of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers talking about, well, you know, I need to do more research on it, learn more about the science behind it. It's not like teams have been negligent to the fact about this. If they're asking you to do this, and they can't require it because of the NFLPA and the agreement that the union has worked out for its players, it can only strongly recommend that the players get vaccinated. You can't couch this saying you don't know enough about it right now. Like, there's a lot of science behind this, and teams have done their due diligence to bring in experts, to have Dr. Alan Sills talk about this with teams throughout the offseason. So it's going to be I'm really interested to see those who are going to stick to their convictions and not get this and continue to live life the way that they were living it, and just how that affects them this season, because it's not going to be smooth sailing, I can promise you that.
No, and for anyone that thinks we were making too much of a big deal out of this, myself and others pointing out that if this eventually leads to what the NFL outlined, the potential for games to be forfeited, for game checks to be missed. I saw Ezekiel Elliott shocked by that news when a reporter posed that question to him. Ron Rivera said that's going to be the source of locker room strife if we're not careful with the way that this goes. So again, not a conversation that's going anywhere until we see the way that these numbers trend as we get closer and closer to the start of the regular season, where those actions would meet some of the very real consequences that the NFL has outlined. But coming up next, speaking of actions and consequences here, what we learned from a celebrity power couple about what you might want to be ready for the next time you walk by them around the street. That's next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Coming up tomorrow morning with Keyshawn, Jaywill, and Zubin, Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy, as our countdown to the NFL season continues. Bears head coach Matt Nagy, tomorrow morning at 8:45 Eastern with Keyshawn, Jaywill, and Zubin on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News. Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Courtney Cronin. We appreciate Courtney Cronin hanging out with us today here, filling in for Jhené Egbuamoke. We also had Alyssa Roenick stop by, our ESPN senior writer, talking about Simone Biles and her decision to withdraw from the U.S. Women's Gymnastics team event. We also talked to Mike Tannenbaum, our ESPN NFL front office insider, and Nicole Arbach, senior college football writer over at The Athletic. If you missed any of those conversations, make sure you download, subscribe, rate, and review the Jhené and Golic Jr. podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, Don't forget to tune into the Chinay podcast, hosted by our very own Chinay Agwumike and fueled by Gatorade. We appreciate their continued support of women's sports journalists and athletes here at ESPN and everywhere. Whatever path you take to greatness, Gatorade is there to fuel it. Greatness starts with a G. Now, we are presented by Progressive Insurance, and we're going to get ready to take this thing on home here with some interesting news about showering and some other things. Let's keep that same energy. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Jhené and Golic Jr.
And Courtney, we're going to lean on your expertise here because keeping that same energy, some news from the Minnesota Vikings, the team you cover, that Phil Rauscher, now the new offensive line coach because of the COVID-19 protocols. Rick Dennison, the former offensive line coach, though, is still with the team. So what can you tell us about these changing roles?
Yeah, this is confirming something that I reported on Friday, that Dennison is out as the offensive line coach and run game coordinator because he's not vaccinated. That was a choice that he made. And the Vikings, a couple days before training camp, you know, this is something that they've been dealing with, as Mike Zimmer told us, for 3 months, trying to work out, well, what is Dennison? What can we do with him? If you're not vaccinated, you can't be in Tier 1 or Tier 2. You can't be around players. So how do you coach yet do it virtually and you can't be around players? It doesn't make any sense. So they named Phil Rauscher. He's going to take over for Rick Dennison. They hired Ben Steele from Auburn to be the assistant offensive line coach, and Rick Dennison's going to be a senior offensive advisor. Losing him was not an option for this team. Like, you know, he's got a lot of expertise and knowledge, and he was the only offensive play caller on staff after Gary Kubiak retired this offseason. So being able to have somebody who can potentially guide the offense, albeit from afar, but, you know, break down tape, help game plan, come up with third down packages, whatever. Like, there's a lot there that you can still do virtually, but he's not going to be in the coaching role on the field because he's not vaccinated. And I don't believe this will be the last time that we hear of something like this happening throughout training camp. As camp gets underway tomorrow, everybody who has not already started, meaning the Cowboys and the Steelers, everybody else is going to be out there. There's going to be a lot of attendance taking to tell you who's there and who's not. And who's not is probably going to be a big question that has to deal with COVID.
It's certainly going to be a huge question. And I think, Courtney, I'll be interested to see the reaction from players as the reality of some of the different restrictions and limitations that they face as a part of camp for players that are vaccinated versus not vaccinated start to take hold. But this is certainly one of them. And as you mentioned, your report about this move with Rick Dennison certainly was the first, but you're right, likely won't be the last. Now, keeping that same energy, let's head to Major League Baseball. Did you see the highlight of Javi Baez taunting Amir Garrett after his walk-off hit for the Cubs? I know these guys got a little bit of history here, but Courtney, the unwritten rules got set on fire, doused with gasoline, and run over by a truck as he turned the bat into a pepper shaker and cranked that thing all the way out of the park. Incredible.
I mean, this is a fun part of baseball, right? Like, I know that we really shouldn't be, like, laughing if we're, you know, baseball purists. I thought it was great. And then, you know, Garrett continued to, like, yell at him from the dugout. I just thought it was fantastic.
We like when people genuinely dislike each other in sports. These are the kind of rivalries people always complain aren't present enough in modern sports. And so, shout out to baseball for giving us a little bit of the juice in all of this. But keeping that same energy to finish off here, Courtney, this is an interesting one we've got to unpack here. We talked about my shower and bathing habits a lot on this show for reasons that I still haven't quite figured out. Someone else's came into the news today. CNN Entertainment reported that Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis, power couple of actors, say they don't believe in bathing their kids or themselves too much. They appeared on an episode of Dax Shepard's Armchair Expert podcast and talked about bathing. Mila Kunis said, "I didn't have a lot of hot water growing up as a kid, so I didn't shower much anyways." They said that basically their thought process with their kids, Courtney, is if you can see dirt on them, clean them. Otherwise, there's no point. Kutcher went on to say that he does, quote, wash his armpits and crotch daily and nothing else ever, and has thrown some water on his face after a workout to get all the salts out here. I have a lot of questions here, Courtney, but how grossed out are you by this?
Quite grossed out, because I know starting tomorrow when the heat index is supposed to be 105 here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and I'm going to be out at training camp, the first thing I'm looking forward to doing when I get home is taking a very long shower where I can get all the salts and everything else off of me that Ashton Kutcher is referring to. I can't imagine. What if Ashton Kutcher was an NFL reporter? Do you think he would shower? You know how nasty that would be?
Oh, my God.
Covering training camp and not showering? That's just where my head goes.
Courtney, immediately, I understand everyone can do things their way here. I'm just in awe of jealous of the fact that apparently he can work out and a little bit of water is enough to get the salts off you. Like, buddy, yeah, we're sweating in two different weight classes here, and I am very jealous of the one that you and Mila Kunis occupy here. So, Courtney, we appreciate it. Good luck with that heat tomorrow here.
Thank
we
you.
All trust and believe that you are not going to be out here stinking the place up with Mila and Ashton Kutcher. Stick around here, though. Seven-time Olympic medalist Sharon Miller on Spain and Fitz next.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.